You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. Hope you guys are having a great week. It's out. I'm excited. We did it. We got it out. We got the Metroland out. And we all survived. And the feedback has been incredible. I am so grateful to the folks that worked so hard with me to get this out. And I'm so happy with how it came out. And it's just been a great week. I'm starting to feel human again. It was definitely one of the craziest things I've had to do stress-wise. But we did it. We got it out. And I hope you guys are loving it. I'm not going to go on for too long because this is a nice, long, fun interview that I had with our cover artists. Our first cover of Metroland Now. It had to be one of the most notable acts in the Capital Region. Just iconic musically. Honestly, so good that it's hard to believe that they are all ours here in the Capital Region. But they have an album release coming up this Saturday at the Hangar, which they have allowed us to co-opt into a unofficial Metroland release party. So I'm very excited about that. So if you are around, come to the Hangar Saturday night, get your tickets online before they're gone. I'll be sharing some links so you know where to get those. But if you just type in Super 400 at the Hangar, I'm sure it'll pop up. You can follow them on their website and on their social media, and follow all of us and follow Metroland for all of the hot goss tips, everything, all the info you could possibly need. This was a really fun interview. It was nice to speak with these guys. I've known them for a very long time, but I'm getting to know them even better now, and it feels wonderful. So thank you for listening and enjoy the interview. We'll be right back with Super 400.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Erin Harkes with the Mistress of None. And my guests, plural, today are the gang from Super 400. I'm so excited to meet with you guys. I've only ever done one-on-one, so this is blowing my mind right now that I've gotten the opportunity to meet with all three of you at once. Lori, Kenny, and Joe. So nice to see you guys. How are you doing?
We're great.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's a Monday. This is the best Monday ever so far. We've got you down in the studio with us.
It's a great day to be in the cellar because it is gloomy outside today.
It certainly is, but
it's the perfect day to be. You don't want to be down here rehearsing when it's super nice out.
No.
We had a run too of like 25 amazing days in a row. Like,
yeah. We can't really complain about the rain that much, but yeah, it's like when it's beautiful out and I see that I have a packed day, I'm like, God damn it.
Plus, we get to wear layers.
Exactly.
It's my favorite thing.
It is nice to bust out the sweater. So, mm-hmm. Well, I know how busy you guys are, so I'm super grateful to get the opportunity to sit with you and interview you and talk about all the amazing things you have coming up. Obviously, I've known you guys for quite some time. I met Joe and Lori. We worked together at Savannah's back in the late 90s.
That's right.
And I think you and I worked in the kitchen together.
Yes, we did. We made some sandwiches.
We definitely made some
beef
sandwiches.
Beef on Weck.
Yep, beef on Weck. I think I was just washing dishes back then. It was before I got bumped up to cooking as well.
You got to earn it.
You do. I was ready to work my way up. I was fine. And then, you know, this like blonde haired dude would just show up every once in a while. I was like, who's this guy? But
We started doing the jam with Mike Iwanos.
That was
on Monday nights. It was awesome.
Tuesdays. Yeah. Was it Mondays when they first did it at Pauly's Hotel?
That's it.
That's what
Mondays.
It was.
Yeah. Tuesdays was Savannah's.
I went the last time they did it at Pauly's. I showed up with my acoustic guitar, not knowing what it was. I thought it was an open mic. And they were so nice to not just like shove me right out.
Was Buck still there?
Yeah. So they got me up and I played and they were like, this is our last one. We're moving it to Tuesdays at Savannah's. And that honestly, that whole experience changed my life as a musician. Like I cut my teeth on that stage. Like people like Adam Graham, like screaming and kicking my ass to make sure that I was singing loud enough. But that was where I got to see you guys play for the first time. Fine line between being inspired and being completely intimidated, and like you guys were that line for me. So it's so great to have ever shared even a second on the stage with you.
It wasn't that long before that the same thing happened to me at Pauly's in very early 96 or late 95. I went to Pauly's for the jam and met Kenny and Joe there.
Yep.
And I had a similar experience. I remember Joe Mealy kicking my butt just like Adam was doing to you to make sure, like, get out there, do it, do your thing.
Yeah, and you knew that you had it in you. But, you know, it's tough to be around these, like, monster performers and be like, oh, God, all right. But, like, yeah, it's nice that somebody just encourages you like that.
Yeah.
I remember watching and being like, I just want to be able to hold my own with these guys. Like, that's all. That was where I just set my goals at. But I was watching the interview when you guys were inducted into the Eddie's Hall of Fame. And I love the story of how you guys met. So, Kenny, did you see her first?
I think I saw her. I saw her, like, she was sitting at the bar and I walked by and I just was like, who's that? You know? And then I think Joe and I were hosting the jam, maybe with, I don't know who. Were we just playing?
Tony Perino was playing organ.
No, we were doing a gig with Perino. Yeah. Tony Perino and Mark LaRose. Right?
Oh, it was a gig.
It was a gig.
Yeah, my parents were there. And
were they?
And, yeah.
Well, I don't remember that.
Yeah. And Joe Mealy was there. And, yeah, it was just a night at Pauly's. And Lori was there, and she came up, and she introduced herself to me. And she asked me to join a band that she was forming. And we had our own band. We were, you know, Joe and I had been writing songs since high school, and we had moved to New York to look for a bass player and a singer, and we couldn't find anybody that was working with the songs. We found a lot of great bass players, but they were all in 25 bands, and every singer we tried wasn't sounding right. And it ended up getting stuck, you know, on me. It ended up being my job to sing, which I did not want to do at all. And so, you know, we ended up moving to Woodstock and we playing our first gigs when I was terrified to sing, absolutely terrified. And because I've been playing guitar my whole life and that's all I wanted to do. I didn't want that other job. And that's not really my personality to be that, you know, front person. You know, I didn't want any of that stuff. But anyways, we were on break or something and she asked me to join her band. And I wasn't interested in joining anybody else's band. I was doing, you know, we were doing our own thing. But
she was like, I got me a drummer already.
She wasn't interested in Joe, so Joe was offended. She just wanted me to be in the band. But the band already had, you know, they had a drummer already.
Oh, so you went to see them specifically to try and recruit Kenny?
It wasn't like I went to recruit anybody. I just walked in and heard these guys play and knew, here it is. You know, destination over. I'm here.
So it was like you just happened to be there and you
just happened to be there. You know, I had I went to college to please my family. It was an obligation that I ended up really enjoying just because I really like to learn. And so I picked some interesting things to study.
Yeah.
And after that, I said, okay, great. Got the diploma and just started going around looking for people to play music with. So it was definitely the two of these guys. It wasn't just Kenny. I just happened to see him first when he got off stage and gave him my number.
And I didn't, I was 23 or 24 years old, somewhere around there. And I just didn't take her seriously, honestly. You know, I was just like a young, dumb
I don't know why.
Guy. And I was like,
you almost blew it.
She's a girl. How good could she
imagine?
Be?
Ah!
Probably. I mean, I don't know if that's what I was thinking, but
there's a reason we're sitting on either side like this.
Oh, yeah. Right. I never thought about it.
I was immature and I didn't know any better. And I had
that's
never
a better answer.
I had never seen a woman really play. Every time there was a girl bass player in a band, it was like, oh, that's cute. You know, it's like this cute chick in the band. And I didn't. That's not what we were trying to do. Is like have some cute chick in the band. You know. So
are we going to fight? Is that?
I'm in a hole and I'm digging a tube.
No, I mean I'm completely confessing. You know, I'm coming clean with it.
I appreciate your confession.
With the real scoop. But
this isn't the first time his feet have been held to the flames.
Yes,
I like
this.
It.
Yeah. Well, obviously she proved me wrong from then until this day. She's still proving me wrong forever. But it was actually Steve Candlin who called me at my mother's house on the coily cable landline back in the 1900s. And he said, you know, did you meet this girl, Lori Friday? And I said, yeah. And he said, are you going to get together and play with her? And I was like, I don't think so. And he was like, why not? And I was like, yeah. He said, no, you should really get together and play with her. She's got a great feel. She's really good. And she would fit great with you guys. So I was like, if Steve's saying it, you know, I respected Steve. So we didn't know how to get a hold of her because I had thrown her number away. And, you know, partly because there was a little bit of an attraction there. I had a girlfriend, I had a longtime girlfriend, like serious girlfriend. And I was just like, this is just trouble. Like, she's just going to be all trouble right in my life. So I'm going to throw this away.
He was right
now
about that.
Sure. Yeah. I know. I like that part of the story for certain. So was Steve your drummer at the time?
No, Steve and I had played together at the open mic at Valentine's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Steve in those days was like encouraging me to do everything. He's like, sing a song. Just sing something. Like, what are you talking about? That's not in my wheelhouse at all to sing. I can do this.
I love how you're both so reluctant to have started singing, and now it just seems so natural. Are you still both reluctant?
I'm glad to be doing it now.
Yeah.
I'm very glad. I mean, I wouldn't have had a career. We wouldn't have had a career together if it wasn't for me having, you know, being forced to step up and do it. It wasn't something I would have done unless I had to do it. It was just basically like, you know, as a kid, we grew up in Wenatchee, Joe and I, and we thought, you know, we're going to write these songs and we're going to get a major label record deal. And in my mind, it was like, it has to happen by the time we're 25, you know,
you
like,
put your own time limit on it.
I think it was like in my mind where it was like, if you don't get something going on by then maybe you should think about something. And, you know, to be two kids growing up in just a small town like that, to think that's even possible. Like, why would we even think that was possible? We were just too dumb to think otherwise, you know?
I'm not going to say dumb. I would say ambitious. I think that's great because, yeah, like, why would you, like, even have such grandiose...
We just didn't want to do anything else.
That's awesome.
That's what we wanted to do. We were going to be musicians. That's what we were going to do. We moved to New York. We followed his brothers. You know, we were always looking up to Jack and Frank. Those guys were like they were our mark. Like, when you were coming out and seeing whoever at Paulie's and going, I need to get on this level. It was Jack and Frank were our level. Those guys were, you know, professional musicians when we were in high school. And to see them play was like, oh my God. And we went to New York and saw all these amazing musicians down there. And that was like music school for me and for Joe too, to see like, this is the level. If you want to be a professional, this is the professional level.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a real...
Yeah, it just looked different. You know,
a real butt
it looked like a different thing.
It feels like a different thing, too.
Yeah. Everybody,
after I met these guys, I remember Jack was playing with Lenny at SPAC, and he was like, do you want to go? Of course I want to go.
Of course.
So I went, and that changed everything for me, seeing him play. Because even just seeing him play, I could feel it. It was like a visceral thing. And after that, any time he came to town, which back in those days was fairly often, he would come back to town and he would like sit in with us somewhere at, like, even at Quintessence.
Yeah.
Back when there was music and Paulie's and Savannah's and everywhere he would come and sit in. And I loved it. I would just hand him my bass, like, here, please play so I can listen to you.
Yeah, I definitely remember the times that Jack was in town, the way people would talk about it. Just to backtrack really quick, though, you guys were joking before when you said Lori only wanted Kenny and not...
I was just kidding.
Okay.
Well, she was.
She was in a band
with a drummer.
Already. Okay.
They had a drummer already.
So I wasn't really kidding. She did have a drummer.
Okay.
She had a drummer.
I was not, but to be clear, I was not trying to pull Kenny in.
It wasn't like, I don't like that guy.
It was like, more like, I am launching myself into this possibility.
Yeah, it wasn't like that guy, not so much. I'll take him, though.
So then,
exactly.
You know, so just to back up the story, it was, we didn't know how to get a hold of Lori, so we found out through somebody that she worked at Last Vestige Record Shop, which is still there.
Of course you did.
Now.
And in the basement.
Joe went
smoking
there.
Smoking cigarettes and filing records on shelves.
You went there. I wasn't with you, but you went.
That's yes. I think you dispatched me.
You went.
Yes, I did.
So she doesn't really want you, but we're going to send you out to make sure we find her.
I was like, hey, how's it going?
All right.
So, yeah, so then she came over. We had a loft apartment in the same loft that Buck Malin. It was Buck Malin that he showed us this.
Was like, that in Albany?
No. It was in Troy.
River Street.
River Street. It's basically like right across the street almost
from
the
Ale House.
What is
it called now? Art House?
It's like an apartment building now. It used to be, it's next to the Meridians building, which is kind of...
Do you know where Capitol Roots is on River Street, yes, heading toward the L House.
Directly across,
yes,
the street.
Okay.
Across the street.
Yes.
So it was just like a giant empty warehouse space that we built bedrooms in, and we had a pool table in there, and our gear was all set up and everything.
Like 20-foot high ceilings.
It was just a
huge, crazy. Yeah.
Bats flying around.
Bats flying around.
Nice. Yeah. You have to have the bats.
And one source of heat in the corner, way in the corner, that will blow hot air once
that
every like
invented.
Couple hours.
We sheetrocked walls for bedrooms, but there was no roofs on them. They were just open at the top because the ceiling was like 20 feet high. So the bedrooms were like, you know, 9 foot wall or whatever. Yeah. And then just like another 11 feet of open space to the ceiling.
You can't be good at everything, you know? So
yours was all the way up to the ceiling.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. Well,
No.
Oh, it was boxed off the top.
I don't know.
You had a ceiling.
Does that part of the story really matter? Anyways, she came over.
And you're done talking,
with her, Joe. With her base. We're just going to, it's a dead end. We're going down a dead end.
I have more to add.
Okay.
This is what we do.
Joe had a giant window. You must have found it in the loft, but you had an enormous window suspended from the ceiling, hanging over your bed.
Yes, yeah.
Like a 10-foot high window hanging. Like, so when he opened his eyes in the morning, there's a big window.
That's cool. I forgot about that.
Very cool.
But so she came over with her bass, and we didn't have a plan. It wasn't like we gave her songs to learn or anything like that. She just showed up with her bass, and she came in, and we were just like this. We were just in a room we had a bass amp there, and she plugged in, and we didn't really talk that much. We just started playing. We just started meandering around on something, and we jammed for like 40 minutes or 45 minutes straight without stopping. We were just like going up and down and sideways and quiet and loud and through all these different feel changes and tempo changes and stuff. And when we stopped and the last note faded out, she was in the band. There was no question about like, hey, do you want to join the band?
Yeah,
or she was in the band.
Okay.
It was all of us knew it. None of us said anything. We all was just sitting there silent, like, wow.
So was it just you three though?
It was just the three of us.
Okay. And
there was nobody
Super
else.
400
there.
Was born.
It was, and you know, when I look back on it, I feel like we sounded the same then as we sound now. And everything we've done ever since then has been just like a continuation of that same song from then until now.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if we sound different now because it's been 96 to, it's been almost 29 years. It'll be 29 years in February. So I wonder, like, it's got to be something a little different. And then the other day I came across the sounding board. Remember Sounding Board?
I do remember Sounding Board.
I came across that one, and that must have been like 98, 99.
Was it 2000?
You just like to argue with everybody, Joe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
No, I think it was.
It was a long time ago, and so I wanted to check it out, and there's a bit of us jamming, and it sounds like it could have been today.
It sounds like, yeah.
That's awesome, though, because, I mean, it was great then, so you would want it to change.
It was just an honest thing. It was just, that's how we sounded, and that's how we still sound. It wasn't like, hey, let's try to sound like this.
Yeah.
Let's try to sound like this other band or something, or let's craft this around, like, whatever's popular at the time. It was just, we started playing, that's what it sounded like. That's what we still sound like. It's a very honest thing.
It's a wonderful thing, honestly.
Which
a lot
has
of people
been,
thought we were, like, sound like Cream early on, but I never thought we did. But
you didn't think we did?
I don't know. I don't think we did.
Maybe, I mean, it could be with Kenny's voice.
Yeah.
He does have a little bit of a Jack Bruce thing at times. Yeah. But not intentionally. It's not like we're trying to tap into it. But the fact that we sound just like us has been really great for the soul, for us, that we can still look back at everything we've done and be proud of it and not think that we were ever trying to sound like anyone else. But during different times in our career, when it's been like record labels have been involved in things, it has definitely been a hindrance to us to just sound like us. You know, well, you need to sound more like this. You need to sound more like that.
Sometimes
we won't do it.
Sometimes it's also
doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
It can be a hindrance that we're not a part of another, like an obvious scene. Like, you know, there's folk rock bands, or, you know, over the course there was like alternative rock bands. We didn't fit with them. There was jam bands. We didn't fit with them.
Yeah.
We jam, but we don't really fit in with those. We never really fit in with that crowd. We tried to play for that crowd sometimes, but it never really, you know, even though there is jamming, it's not, I don't know, it's just not their vibe. So
I would never call you guys a jam
band. We're not a rockabilly
band. What would you call it?
I appreciate the integrity of not changing what you do just to fit into one particular category, because that honestly is what makes you guys as great as you are, not to fangirl or anything. But like, I definitely hear like classic rock influences, but no one band in particular. And I think that's amazing. I think that's what makes you guys, as you know, iconic, like locally. And, you know, sometimes when I hear your music, I have this moment where I go, oh, I can't believe that I know them. Like, it sounds like something that is beyond this area and beyond, you know, anything that I could, like, have any physical connection to. You know, it's just great.
Wow, and thank you.
But definitely, I've always attributed it, again, just ever so slightly to classic rock in the best way possible, in the classic rock that I wouldn't hear on the radio, that I would listen to, like the B-sides, like... something I wouldn't be forced to listen to when my husband is driving, something that I actually choose to listen to, you know, just the great. And I, obviously you guys have done the Get Zep. You can definitely tell like the Zeppelin influence, which I think is also incredible. And I love that. I mean, you guys getting to sing any Led Zeppelin with you just is like, oh yeah,
that was fun.
It's always so much fun, but I love what you guys have done with that, and it seems like a great...
It's a great fit, and it's been incredibly fun for us, because that's the soundtrack of our life, all of those albums. So finding a singer like Sean, who has taken to it so easily, it's a blast.
Yeah.
It's like a dream come true. Coho's Music Hall, all that.
Yeah.
That's, and it's stuff, it all mixes together with like the Troy Music Academy, because Sean approached us about teaching there, and then, you know, we have that music school, we have the Troy Music Academy, and it's, you know, we teach a lot of that classic rock stuff to the students. And I always, sometimes people say, well, I want to just do my own stuff or whatever. And of course you want to do, write your own music and make up your own stuff, but it's great to walk in the footsteps of those giants, all those classic rock giants. That's where all, at least, you know, for the guitar, bass and drums, that's where all the great stuff is.
Absolutely.
And I always tell them, like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You're never going to reinvent, you know, you're not going to reinvent the hand, but you're going to have your own fingerprints. And I feel like that's, we're not reinventing anything. We're just ourselves. But obviously we're playing around in that stuff that we love, but we have our own sound that's somewhere in there. You know, we just, I grew up listening to and admiring that music so much, but I think that we always try to make sure that it's not a direct copy of anything.
Yeah, you're not copying anybody. Like I said, that's why it's so hard to put you in a category. And like, you know, classic rock was just a mere influence, but overall, I love that you guys have, you know, you're not emulating anything. You're being your own thing, and it's very unique. And that's what makes it great.
Maybe that's why we're still together. So we haven't gotten tired of a certain sound.
Yeah. It's nothing to get tired of.
It's like a conversation that we have every time we play.
Well, as Kenny was saying, it was like everything that you guys are doing is just picking up off that first 40-minute jam back in 96.
Yeah.
When did you two, Kenny and Lori, when did you guys become boyfriend, girlfriend?
It was like right around 2000, and we started fighting a lot in rehearsals. Like, you know, like, I'm out of here. Walk out the door type fighting.
Yeah.
Like crying on the way home. No, I'm just kidding.
He was crying on the way home.
Maybe.
Yeah. I was like, why are you guys fighting so much?
And so we were like, all right, we got to do something about this. Let's go on double dates with our significant others, right? So we would do that. We'd go out to see a movie and see dinner or have some dinner. And then we'd realize that the two of us are yucking it up and telling stories. And yeah, right. Remember the time? Like, yeah, right. Oh, my God. It was so great. Awkward. And then the other two weren't.
We just had so much shared history already at that point, and so much in common through the music and just through all the friendships that we had. And you know, we just realized that, I mean, we were just best friends, really, you know. I mean, the three of us really all together are like a unit of friends that I, you know, if I got to go on a long car ride with somebody, it's these guys. If I'm going to go, if I'm, you know, like hanging out in a basement, like wherever the three of us are, we're always having fun. So we just kind of took that fun to another level.
No, Joe, did you ever feel left out? Like when they started to?
No.
We were very worried about that. You know, we were worried. We were very cautious about, you know, becoming entangled like that, because we were worried that we would destroy the band. If it didn't work out, we would have to, you know, it was a big risk. And we were worried about Joe and how he's going to feel. Would he feel like a third wheel, or would it get weird between the three of us, and would it wreck our music? It just was like very dangerous.
But I tell people a lot that that's the reason why we're still together, because it's like two thirds is like cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like these guys are cool. Like as long as I can maintain, you know, it's kind of why I think that's why we're still together.
Yeah. No, whatever works.
There's a lot of reasons for it, you know, but it definitely calmed down the fighting.
You know? When you realize what you were fighting about the whole time. All right. That makes sense.
The pent up, you know, energy. But yeah, it was a scary time for us. It was a very exciting time because we felt like we could have it all or we could lose everything.
Yeah.
And we ended up having it all as much as we could, you know.
But the three of us don't act any differently.
No, we don't.
But you could see why it would be a concern. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, if you just felt like, you know, obviously these guys are doing things that you can't be involved in. I don't want to ask too many questions, you know, but I'm assuming.
I think you talked with Joe, too, about it before.
Yeah, he was totally cool about it.
Yeah, whatever gets you guys to stop fighting, right?
I think his
I
think his thing really was more like, who am I to stand in the way of somebody's happiness? You know, I mean, he was just totally selfless and awesome about it.
Which, again, just, you know, speaks to the relationship that the three of you have. I know that at Savannah's, we used to call you guys the Super Friends. I'd be like, oh, the Super Friends are coming in. And I was like thinking about that today. And I was like, I hope that, like, I always thought it was a compliment. I don't know if they were being like dicks when they said it, but I always thought it was
We were always hanging out together.
Yeah.
You know, we had that apartment. It was there. And then there was the Ale House, which is kind of across the street and down a little bit. And then we had a rehearsal space eventually that it was kind of like the Bermuda Triangle of our existence, where we would kind of get up, go to the Ale House, have lunch, go over to the rehearsal space and play for like hours and hours and hours and hours, and go back to the Ale House and be there until daylight. And we just always worked together.
Yeah, I was definitely never there for any of those nights. Definitely not.
No.
Definitely didn't watch a sunrise with any of you guys. Back to Savannah's real quick. I remember that's where I was. I was working that night when you appeared on Saturday Night Live with Lenny Kravitz, and it was such a great moment because the band stopped playing and everybody shut up.
Oh my God.
And they turned the TVs on. Wow. And we all just stood there and watched it, and everybody was so proud of like our guy on TV. And I remember like of course, like, I mean, there's Lenny Kravitz there, but like I locked in watching you, and like you just had the best presence, because you had this like good combination of being very, like, you know, humble, but also like there was this like wide-eyed like, holy shit, this is what I'm doing right now. It was an amazing moment for Albany, for Troy, for the Capital Region, for you, I'm sure. And it was that Jack said that Lenny needed another guitar player, right? And
yeah, we were working with Jack. Jack was producing records for us. He produced a few records with us, and he was playing the stuff for Craig Ross, Lenny's guitar player, who was also the musical director of the band. And then they had a hit single called Again, which at the time of that filming, that song was number one in the country. So they wanted, when they performed it, they wanted to have all the instrumentation from the record, and there was multiple guitar parts. So there was four guitar parts, an acoustic part, an electric part, a 12-string electric, and an electric sitar. So they needed two extra people. So they got Junior Marvin from Bob Marley and the Wailers to play one part. And Craig had heard our stuff and was impressed by it and liked it. And he said, how about, why don't you get your guy to do it? And so between Jack and Craig, somehow it came to be that I got asked to come down and sort of audition for it. So I went down with my guitar, kind of, you know, terrifying.
Probably all happened so fast too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went down to New York and it was the beginnings of the rehearsals for that show, but it was also kind of like, you know, my first day there was sort of an audition. So that was kind of, it was a little, the
was
whole
it
thing
all
was,
in that week?
It was all in that week, yeah. So I spent a week in New York for rehearsals and then the filming. And it's live, you know, Saturday Night Live, so it's live, so you cannot make a mistake. So there's a lot of pressure. It wasn't like it was a difficult part to play or anything, but it just was a lot of pressure thinking.
I'll bet.
You know, it was pre, you know, streaming Netflix and stuff like that. So it was like Saturday Night Live was still really a big deal.
Yeah, you had to stay up to watch it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there wasn't so many options like there are now.
I never heard that story about everything at Savannah stopping. And
oh, yeah.
I never heard that's that story either.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, well, I'm glad to be the one to tell
no,
you.
That's
it was
amazing.
Such. Yeah, who? I mean, it was like we watched. So it was on the
I
whole time.
I didn't know
you remember
and
who was
then
playing?
When it went to the commercial, we're like, okay, it's the musical act. The band stopped. Everybody shut up. Obviously, the quietest it's ever been in Savannah's because that place was just full of sound and smoke at all times. Like, it was just nonstop. And yeah, everybody just, for both songs, it was just.
Wow. Who was the band?
That's amazing.
Who knows?
I just wonder.
Who gives a shit, right?
So it was after midnight and there was live music happening.
Oh, yeah.
Just
yeah,
getting started.
Bands used to play from like 9 to 1 or something like that, I think.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Those were the days, right?
That's so cool. It's great to hear that story.
Oh, yeah. You know, everybody, we were so proud.
I was, you know, I was very relieved when it was over and I didn't mess up. You know?
Yeah. No, it sounded great, but like, everybody was like super proud. It was such a great moment for, like, again, for the Capital Region. So what year was that?
2001.
2001.
Yeah.
All right. So that was, yeah, that was like kind of.
I know that because somebody posted it like a year ago.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you can probably get that on like Hulu.
You can't find
or something,
it. It's hard
yeah?
to find, I think.
What's
Jim,
that?
The guy that runs our Wiki page, the Superfund Wiki page, he had posted it, the video, I think, on the anniversary of it, maybe
probably.
Last year or something. And it was the first time I had seen it in forever. I never videotaped it or anything. I didn't have a copy of it, so I never really saw it after.
I know that Lorne Michaels used to be a little like tight-fisted about stuff that got shared, but lately you can get more episodes and stuff, so you can probably get a digital copy of that now.
Mm. Yeah, you should have it.
Yeah. I know I had, because I was on, not to make it about me, when I did that little stint on Fallon, my roommate taped it on VHS. But then she got mad at me, so she deleted the tape, and then somebody else managed to get a copy
oh
of it
God.
For me, so I got it.
That's me.
Oh, but like the quality of it is like garbage, but I don't care, you
right,
know.
Right.
It's better that it's garbage because I was still drinking then, so it wasn't the best look for me. But like people were like, "Did you know you were going to be on TV?" And I was like, "Do you think I would have looked like that if I knew I was going to be on national television?" So obviously I feel like we should do like a two-parter because this feels like we could talk forever and ever, but you know, not to fast forward, not to jump through like two decades. We're going to have to revisit some of this stuff for sure. But now you have just released an album. It came out in August.
Yes.
What's the name of the album?
Live from Troy, New York.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Did you record it at the Hangar?
We did.
Okay.
And it was not meant to be a show that was going to be recorded for a live album.
That's awesome.
We played a special show. It was the night of my birthday. We had a lot going on in our lives at the time, and we had a ton of energy behind the performance. And before we went on to play, Kenny was going to just make a very simple stereo mic recording of the show. But Troy Pohl, front of house engineer for the Hangar and all around amazing guy, he decided, I'll just multi-track it. It'll be easy. And then you guys will have it. You can use some of it for like internet stuff if you
Except
want.
Except he was more cranky about it than that.
No.
I was like, can I just get a board? He's like, no, you're not doing that. It's terrible. And I was like, I get pretty good. You know, I've got a 4 mic. He was like, no, I'll just multi-track it.
Troy's so never cranky with me, say, so I don't remember that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like Troy at
so
all.
So all we wanted to do was just get some content video stuff, you know. Nobody knows like you do. You know, you're so much better at it than we are because constantly posting great stuff. But
well, we had a whole conversation about that when we were down seeing Jeff Beck. And you were like, yeah, you're like, poor Lori has been pulling the weight of the social media because all of a sudden Kenny Holman was on social media.
I didn't
I
have
like,
social
you're
media.
Like, who are you all of a sudden?
Lori was doing all the work, and I was like, what can I do to help? I need you to do social media content stuff. So I was like, I didn't have a Facebook page. I didn't have Instagram. I didn't even know how to. She was like, took my phone and went, doot, doot, doot. Now you have an Instagram account. Doot, doot, doot. Now you have Facebook. And I was like, no. So yeah, I talked to you about like, how do you do it? How do you make a reel? How do you, so I was in, you know, in the process of figuring that stuff out, and just like, we had a guy come and video it with a multi-camera setup, but it was a total fail on his part. He, one of his cameras got knocked over in the first song and he didn't notice it till later. And then one of his cameras ran out of battery. And then afterwards, his hard drive died and he lost all the footage. So that was a bust. It was no footage. I was like, well, I guess we won't. But then Troy, anyways, sent the recording and I pulled it up and it was really good. And I was listening to it and I was like, to these guys, I think we might have a live record here. Like, this is really good. Like, all the tempos were good and the energy was good.
The vocal performances,
yeah,
most importantly, were really good.
The vocal performances were non-embarrassing, I'll say. And it was like, it's here. And there was just some issues like with bleed on the microphones and stuff. And I was going to mix it myself. And I started trying to mix it and I was having some issues. And I asked Troy about it. And he like played around with it and fixed it and sent it back to me. And it was like, will you mix the record? And he was like, yeah, I'd love to mix the record. Yeah. So,
and he... It cannot be overstated that he put a lot of effort and love into this mix, because the recording, I mean, it's a multi-track, but you're working with a room that it's a loud room.
Yeah.
So he had some challenges and it sounds amazing.
He's very good.
He did a great job with it, and he listened to all our little wants and desires.
He got inundated with requests.
I'm sure, but honestly, if it were anybody else, like, I've worked with him. I came in to sing backup on somebody else's project that I won't mention, but like, we kind of looked at each other at one point, like, hey, okay. Like, you know, I'm sure hearing from you, there's that mutual respect. And you know, like, of course he would be like, whatever you guys want, even being cranky about it, knowing that, I mean, how great to go in, like, not even knowing that you were going to end up with something like that. Like, are there new songs on it that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
it's probably part of the reason why it's good.
One of the songs.
We didn't go into it like, this is going to be for all time.
Yeah, if you're thinking about it while you're playing.
Exactly.
Like, this is going to be a live record, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the songs on the digital release is the first time we ever played it. So, and it's on the record. So it's like, it was the most fun record to make because we didn't know we were making it.
That's so amazing.
We were just playing a show and we were playing our hearts out. And then it was done.
And it all lined up. There was a local artist who I found on Instagram who is incredible. Her name is Madison Shishi. And I found her because she took a little clip from us at a show that we played at Gahoe's Music Hall, and she turned it into a piece of artwork. So I messaged her and said, you want to work together? And she made an amazing video for us for our song Spirit in the Sound, which is on YouTube. And then it just made sense to ask her, do you want to do this album cover? And this girl is a rock and roller, and she was all in. And we love the album cover.
That's so great.
You're leaving here with an album.
Okay. Like an actual, like a record?
You have a turntable?
I do.
Yes.
Yay!
Yeah, we put it out on vinyl. The vinyl has less, like two less songs than the CD release, which has like 20, like 10 less songs.
Is it going to be on like Spotify and Apple Music too, though?
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Okay.
Yeah.
I think there's like 8 songs on the vinyl and 10 on the CD, and then there's like 20 something on the...
There's one more on the CD. And then there are 20 on the digital release. So if you buy the vinyl or the CD, we give you a code so you can get the entire night front to back.
Oh, well, I already have an account, so I'll make sure to get all of the songs either way. But thank you. That's very generous of the code. And we are going to be celebrating this release at Gahoe's Music Hall on November 2nd.
Actually, it's at the place where we recorded it. It's at the Hangar in Troy.
Okay, can you... When you send that to me, I'm going to rewind. So we're going to be celebrating. That makes more sense. We're going to be celebrating the release of this recording at the Hangar in Troy.
Yes.
On November 2nd.
Yes.
Tell us more about that night.
It's the place where we recorded the album, and it just makes sense to have the party there. We want to pack the room and have a party.
Anybody else playing with you?
No, we're just doing it.
Good.
We're doing the whole night.
That's how the night was the first time.
That's how it should be.
And then we're going to make another record, and then we'll have a record release there again, and then make a record. Troy said, well, let's just keep doing this. It was like a snake biting its own tail.
That might be.
The cover with the picture of the cover.
That's what I was thinking too, yeah. That's awesome. So, all right, so November 2nd, where can people get tickets?
They can get tickets on Eventbrite. They can also get paper tickets at the Ale House in Troy. And nice. Then there's no surcharge. There's no internet surcharge for that. It's $15 cash.
It's going to sell out.
We can't wait.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that we live for, having a Troy room full of people going nuts.
Yeah. I can't believe that before when you said the apartment, I was like, was that in Albany? It was just because I remember one of those like closing down the bar nights, we ended up in an apartment in Albany, and I'll have to try. It must have been Nick's or something like that.
Right.
Ferrandino. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's stupid. These guys are Troy. They're all Troy. And I love that. But I mean, they belong to the entire capital region. And as I said earlier, the music is so great that when you listen to it, you can't believe that you're also blessed enough to get to actually know them in real life. And that is the truest statement I could say about you guys. Like the music is just great, and I can't wait to hear the album, and I can't wait to, I'm off that night, so I'm going to definitely be there on November 2nd. This new career path of mine, I get to actually go see other bands play now.
Amazing.
Somebody was like, you still haven't been? I was like, dude, like I just started, you know, like I'll get there. I can actually go out now. So yeah. I'm excited. So you guys heard it here. It'll probably be sold out by the time you hear this, but November 2nd, you can get the tickets in person at the Ale House, or you can get them online on Eventbrite. The album is called Live in Troy. The band is Super 400. Anything else you want to make sure that we add?
Joe, do you have any last words for your people?
You've already said too much, honestly.
See you on the 2nd.
So I follow them on all the social media. Be friends with Kenny on Facebook because he's really good at this now. Also, YouTube. You have a YouTube channel?
We do. Subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Subscribe to the YouTube channel. See the video that Lori was just talking about. And, you know, like, listen, follow, all that good stuff. But definitely check out the show on November 2nd. And thank you guys so much for taking the time to meet with me.
Thanks, Aaron. We love you.
Love you, too. Thank you, guys. We'll see you soon.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Aaron Harks.
Welcome back to the Mistress of None. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope to see you guys Saturday at the Hangar in Troy. You can get all of your info, like I said, at themetroland.com or on social media at Metroland Now. You can follow Super 400 on any of their social medias and go to their website, which is, I believe, super400music.com. But I'm going to double check it right now while you're listening, because this is how we do things. Band. Hold on. It is super400.com. Cool. They got that. So, yeah, super400.com. Get your tickets. If they're not already gone, there's a chance they're gone, but do your best and come see us this Saturday. The show is at the Hangar, 8:00. It's going to be a fun night, and then keep your ears peeled for when we're having our official launch party, which who knows when that'll be. You'll just have to keep tuning back in. Like, listen, follow, share, all that good stuff. Let's get the good word out. And thank you again, once again, for tuning in. We will see you next time on The Mistress of None. Have a good day. Bye.
You're listening to The Mistress of None podcast with Aaron Harks.